welcome to Ray and Tay today. It's Friday. Woo! Come on. Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. This is Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and you want to join us on a great Sports Talk Friday, give us a ring, 718-664-9098. Like always, you can email us any of your thoughts about the show, the website, or whatever, and that's at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. And check out the website, very interactive, a lot of good things on there, NFL, college football, college basketball, the NBA, photos, polls, rayandtaytoday.com, and you can always get us at Twitter and Facebook too. Ray and Tay Today, very interactive. That's the type of guys we are, Ray. Right? Let them know what we're giving them, man. It's a very deep show.
It deep. Is, and you know, this is an excellent time to get involved with us, Ray and Tay. So get in there because we got a lot of sports going on. We're going to summarize the baseball with the awards. We're going to talk about NASCAR a little bit. They're finalizing their season. We're going to talk some NBA. We're going to talk some college basketball. We're also going to talk some college football, and we're going to have our man George Reister on. Reister's never wrong. We'll talk a little bit about his Oregon Ducks and the national championship picture and the Heisman Trophy race.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll end the show talking NFL. The Jets pick up a veteran in Ed Reed.
Woo!
And there's some
11.
Games in this week 11, culminating, of course, with a couple of huge games, San Francisco at New Orleans and KC at Denver. So we've got a lot to talk about. This is a fun time of year in terms of sports. You know, we got a couple of sports winding down. We got a few sports kicking in. NHL even talking about changing rules and hockey. So we got a lot to talk about.
Well, you know what? Why don't you tell them about some of these baseball awards? Because we predicted some of these in the season. Maybe we got a couple right. But I guess let's start off with the AL and NL MVP and work our way backwards.
So AL MVP stays in Detroit and stays with Miguel Cabrera. So not a surprise, not a huge surprise there. Chris Davis had some run at it about halfway through the season, but Miguel Cabrera was just too much. And that means in the last 3 years the MVP has come out of Detroit. So that's phenomenal. And on the NL side, your boy Andrew McCutchen from the Pirates wins the NL.
Yeah.
Despite not being in the top five in any offensive category. So we thought that Paul Goldschmidt could have a chance.
Yeah.
Yadier
Molina,
if he didn't get hurt, was probably the odds-on favorite going into August. So kudos to Andrew McCutchen with not a huge statistical season. But a Pirate
winning.
He's
the last first Pirate since your boy, Barry Bonds, did it back in, 91? 92 season, yeah. So that's good. So let's go to the Cy Young.
So Cy Young, we have Mad Max Scherzer, another Tiger, winning
which
it.
Which we all knew. Yeah, we all knew, right?
Starting the season, we both, I think, predicted Verlander. But his teammate, Max Scherzer, now, guess
outshined
what? Contract
him.
Negotiation time. Scott Boras pops into the picture saying, Mad Max
ridiculous.
Is ready to negotiate.
And
so,
then in the NL,
good luck
so is someone else getting ready to cash in.
What's that?
I said on the NL, your boy Clayton's getting ready to cash in, too.
And then you have the lefty, Clayton Kershaw, winning his second. And, they're going to have to pay him, too. He's looking like Sandy Koufax Jr. right now. So good for him. So the Dodgers have a young, studly pitching staff. They'll be back next year.
They could have got Rookie of the Year.
Yes.
Could have got Rookie of the
Year.
So
we'll continue with that.
Yeah.
Except Rookie of the Year in the National League was the phenom from Cuba, Jose Fernandez. So Cuba got the Rookie of the Year. It was just the other Cuban player, Fernandez. Yasiel Puig didn't get it. And, you know what?
Good for the Marlins, though.
He was consistent. He was the man. He pitched all year. He had a great season. I have no problems with that.
Yeah.
And then in the American League, it's Will Myers. So he ran away with that in the American League. And from jump, he just had a great year for Tampa. So great for them. And then to finalize
the managers.
Award season, the coach of the year, the manager of the year, in the AL, Tito Francona. So
he deserved it. That's our guy. We love
Cleveland. And really instills this winning attitude. They lost in the one-game playoff, but you know what? They had a great season. Nobody expected anything from them. I looked at their roster in the beginning of the year, and I said, you know, they'll finish at the bottom or near the bottom of the AL Central. So good for them. And
they brought back baseball
to
the fans in Cleveland.
In the National League, Clint Hurdle from the Pirates picks up the NL. Manager of the year.
Royal player. Hurdle used to play, you know, he was a player.
And he was a
player.
Great coach.
For the young fans. Yeah, they don't know.
He was a great coach for the, you know, for the Colorado Rockies. So Clint Hurdle does his thing. So Pittsburgh's got two awards. So they've got something to look forward to. And, you know, Detroit has MVP and Cy Young. So very interesting baseball.
It'll be interesting to see if the window might have closed for the Tigers, although they still seem to have, you know, a mixture of youth and veterans. They got to re-sign, you know, obviously Scherzer and some of their players, but they got so close, the Tigers and the Rangers, for a couple years. You wonder, can they still maintain it? And we'll see what they do in the off season, and, you know, what players are doing. The Yankees are talking to your boy Javier Lopez. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of movement in the baseball off season, and we'll definitely bring it to you and discuss it. But as we talked about seasons ending, real quick, it's pretty much over. We know down in South Florida, NASCAR ends this weekend, and looks like Jimmy Johnson will win his sixth Sprint Cup Chase Championship, and, you know, one behind Petty and Earnhardt. They've won seven titles, so he's about to be up there with the GOATs and be a GOAT, one of the greatest of all time, and it would almost be a minor miracle for him not to win it. He'd have to totally just crash out and not finish, so and we don't wish that on anybody, so we'll tell you what happens in NASCAR on Monday. And then, Ray, this is fascinating. Before we really hoop it up with the college hoops, he's talking about some news. We got some recruits, Jahlil Okafor and Tyus Jones, are going to Duke. They want to be Dukies. That's the top center and one of the top, if not the top point guard in college and high school basketball. So the rich get richer from Duke having, you know, Parker and the great team that they have this year at number four in the country, and, you know, just lost the other night to Kansas, you know, almost at the buzzer, played a great game. Now they're having two of the best recruits, and we don't know if Jahlil's related to Emeka Okafor, but, you know, Okafor's a pretty, you know, common name, so it probably isn't, but we'll have to get the research staff out on that one. But, you know, listen, Coach K, all these big programs, they just continue to bring in, just like, you know, even next year, Kentucky's going to have studs and whatever. And sort of speaking of that, let's talk the college hoops, man. What we saw the other night in Chicago was so great for college basketball, where you saw probably not just three of the best, but you probably saw eight, you know, maybe eight of some of the top players, freshmen, in college hoops, and just some of the top players they're going to be drafted from, whether it's Gary Harris and Adrian Payne from Michigan State, who, you know, who beat Kentucky and those young kids against the great young Julius Randle and that Kentucky team, and they had a couple of their sophomores that came back. And Kentucky's got young. They've got the Harrison brothers, Andrew and Aaron, who look great. And then in the second game, Duke against Kansas, where Jabari Parker looked like he was a better, I don't want to say a better version, but a mixture of like Derek McKee and Pippen, who could, like, you know, rebound, pass, assist, score. The kid was just nasty, but Wiggins comes back at the end after some early foul trouble, gets a couple of clutch hoops, steals. Parker fouls him, fouls out of the game, and he gets the big dunk, Wiggins, and Kansas wins. What are your thoughts, man? I mean, obviously we know these four schools, right, 1, 2, 4, and 5 are going to be there towards the end, you know, throw in a Louisville, throw in a Syracuse and some other teams, but isn't that kind of great for college basketball, which, you know, usually gets its shine after the NFL season, early season, to have this championship classic and to get this attention before Thanksgiving? It's got to be great for the sport, right?
Well, it is great for the sport, and you know what? It has to be this way now because the best players are one and done. So if you don't get to see them until games 5, 6, 7, when they start playing in their conferences, then you've lost out on, you know, 20% of their season. So the thing that's interesting to me is that 1, 2, 4, and 5 all played on the same day, on the same court. Great kudos for scheduling, right? Kudos for the NCAA and the conference sponsor, or sorry, the tournament sponsor or the game sponsor, and obviously, you know, TV had a lot to do with it and everything. But to get those two teams on the court was great. And also, I don't think I've ever seen, and this is the new age of basketball players, but I don't think I've ever seen three rookies, freshmen, come in and be as mature and as prepared and as ready for the moment as these kids were.
Dominant,
now, you know, Andrew Wiggins was a little fired up in the first half, and he really needed a second half, but the kid is a kid in his first college game, right? So these kids were tremendously, tremendously impressive, and Randall is a beast, and he's left-handed. He needs to figure out his right hand, and he, you know. And John Calipari had a great comment. I thought he said, "Look, if I was just trying to win college games, I would just keep him 7 feet from the basket." He said, "But I'm trying to help this kid grow into an NBA player and work on his game at the next level." I'm paraphrasing, and therefore he's got to figure out what to do at 20 feet. Basically, alluding to the fact that he's got to develop a right hand. He's got to develop alternative moves. But these kids are so good and so prepared, and they used to be the exception, you know, a kid at a freshman coming in.
I mean,
40 years ago in Kareem and Bill Walton's time, you couldn't even play as a freshman.
Yeah.
And now these freshmen, I mean, these kids could be NBA players. So,
you know what's amazing? There were like 80 NBA scouts there. Did you realize
that?
Like 80 NBA.
It's a little weird to me, though.
Some teams sent everybody, sent the GM, the scouts, and the president.
Yeah, it's a little weird to me to scout them in November. I mean, maybe in February, because you know they're coming out. But okay. I mean, they deserve it. The one thing that came to mind, and I tweeted about this, so for all you Twitter followers, thank you, and I appreciate all the retweets and everything we get. Think about this, though. Think about this draft and how – unfortunately, people are going to start tanking in the NBA, which we don't want to see. But think about how in June, when all of these kids, plus the people that stayed, so like the Gary Harrises of the world and the Smarts
Marcus
of the world,
Smart, yeah.
Wow, what a draft class. I was looking at 84 and
some of the Tar Heel kids.
Thinking about how good this draft could be. I mean, I don't know if you have an Olajuwon, Jordan, Barkley, you know, in these three. But, and you certainly don't have the size, but pretty, pretty deep first round. And you have a draft that could potentially have a couple of franchise changers and several all-stars coming out of there. So, wow, can't wait to see them in college. And like we tweeted out also, enjoy them now. Because with most of these guys, they're one and done. So
yeah, and you know what's going to be interesting, though? But listen, I give NBA teams credit, right? I mean, look, you don't know if you're going to get the number one pick. But for teams like, you know, Utah, right, you don't want to be middle of the road, you know, like, you know, Peter Vesey said on our show, like, you know, they weren't doing anything with Millsap and Jefferson. So they let them go. They want to see if Cantor and Favors can do anything, and the young kid Burks and Gordon Hayward. And so maybe they, you know, wind up not making the playoffs and they're in the lottery. But at the same time, that's the only way you're really going to get better. You, like Cleveland, you had to get a LeBron James. You got to get a Kyrie Irving. So maybe with those young players they already have, they get – Jabari Parker or Marcus Smart. You know, you don't know who they get. And with this year's draft, you could, from 1 to 5, you could probably get a franchise-changing player. So that's what I like about this draft. It's not just getting the first or second pick, right? I mean, they're saying that there could be easily 4 to 5 players that can, you know, be, you know, prolific all-stars, you know, like for 10, 15 years. So, I mean, obviously maybe the top three are the changers, but even for to have three guys, that's a lot. So, I mean, but for you in the NBA, which we'll get to, you know, you got Utah and Philly and these teams, you know, that are starting off and they're playing good ball. Like, you know, people are like, oh, the Sixers are tanking it. Well, you don't tell that to MCW and what the Sixers have been doing, because they've been playing some basketball and you love to see it. You know, I mean, I'm excited. I mean, look, let's just get to it. Talking NBA, I said to you this off air, and I'm sort of upset as a Knicks fan. I got to vent a little bit. The Knicks lose last night, and you know they beat Atlanta the night before, and their owner's running his mouth, guaranteeing wins, and there's trade rumors of Shumpert for Fareed, which, you know, most people feel like you'd have to do it, but with this roster and this team and just the way that they are, the way they got spanked by the Spurs at home and then last night back at the Garden, national television, lose to the Rockets, who, you know, just lost to the Sixers the night before, and they're playing okay, not great. It's sort of frustrating because Melo puts up, what, it's 45 and 10. Yeah, 45, 10, and 4 and this and that. But it's like he doesn't know the situation. So, you know, you can't foul Hacker Howard or Hacker Shaq, like we call it Hacker Howard now, under 2 minutes. But he goes ahead and fouls the guy, and then they can put Harden to the free throw line, and it extended the lead, you know, from a 2 to a 3-point game. And it just puts such a bad taste in your mouth, and the Knicks wind up losing. And, you know, the N1 was not, you know, going to be called because, you know, they fouled Anthony too early when he shot up and made that a miracle three. I give Anthony credit for making a shot, but he fouled him early. And so the Knicks lose. And I don't know. To me, like I told you off air, I just think Bagnarni has got to be used for what he does. He doesn't do much but score, so let him be your scorer and be maybe your sixth man. If you're going to start JR now, well, start Martin at center while Chandler's out for 6 weeks. You know what I mean? And then let Melo and JR do their thing. And then when Bagnarni comes in with maybe Amari and whoever else, let Bagnarni get the rock and do some scoring, because that's what he does. In 4 starts at center, he's averaging over 20 points a game. So that's my spiel. I'm frustrated as a Knicks fan. I mean, hey, if you're a Pacer fan, you're happy. You're 8-0. The Spurs, 8-1. But Knicks fan, yikes.
Yeah, Knicks are in trouble, and I tell you why. Not only are the Knicks in trouble now, but as we start getting towards the All-Star break and as we start getting to the trade deadline, people are going to be talking about what moves are the Knicks going to make to keep Carmelo happy. Maybe Carmelo wants to trade out of New York. I don't think he does. But, you know, there's going to be all this negative attention brought on the Knicks. And this is a team that needs to find its identity and find what they do and what they do well. And, frankly, the heart and soul of the team is Tyson Chandler. So Carmelo's obviously the man, and he's the best player on the team and is the offensive, you know, stud. But I think that this team really gets its identity and gets its toughness from Tyson Chandler. And the problem last year, and similar this year, is the Knicks are a small, soft team, especially without Tyson. And the size that we have as Knicks, yeah, I'm a Knicks fan. I agree. I'm impartial. I try to be impartial, but you know, in my heart, I'm a Knicks fan. And the problem is, you know, Andrea Bargnani's tall, but he doesn't play big. And the other bigs that we have, so Kenyon Martin, you know, he's limited in his minutes. Amari Stoudemire is limited in his minutes, and he doesn't play big, you know, either, especially on the defensive end. So the Knicks have a big-time issue without Tyson Chandler. And, you know, it's going to start to become a media frenzy in New York. And Dolan's starting to guarantee games. What is it, the eighth or ninth game? Really? Just stay out of
and
it.
And don't even
the
put pressure
play.
On Woody. You know, they're putting pressure on Woody. And to me, you know, Woody's trying to build something. You don't have the best talent. I think winning 54 games last year, I think Woody is a heck of a coach with all those injuries and the veterans.
That might have been the worst thing is now you came in second in the conference and you're thinking, okay, where do we go? No place to go but up. But really, with the roster, there was no place to go but down because everybody in the conference got better. You know, and you could argue that the Knicks were able to keep J.R. Smith, but, you know, did they really, really improve him? They brought in a Bargnani. They don't really know how to work him in. Woody's a defensive coach, and you give him a seven-footer who shoots, you know, 15 feet from the basket, and he has to change his game. Something's got to give. So I think the Knicks are in trouble. I think they'll make the playoffs. I think but I don't look for a great first half of the season. I think the Knicks really need to start thinking about finding an identity and then working off that identity and building towards a good second half if they want to do anything in the playoffs.
Look, I'll tell you this. I mean, besides the Pacers, you know, the Heat are sort of, you know, not playing so great, but you know, the next, you know, three, four, or five top teams all in the Western Conference. And last night, you saw 116-115, a great game. Durant was in foul trouble. You know, Westbrook is back, 31, played great. When he wants to take it to the hole, no one can stop Westbrook. But Golden State Warriors, ladies and gentlemen, if you've got Bogut and Lee healthy and, you know, Jermaine O'Neal can do some, you know, veteran rebounding and, you know, aggressive fouling off the bench and give you minutes, and the way Draymond Green plays, I love Iguodala hit the big shot. Klay Thompson plays out of his mind. Steph Curry is just a lethal weapon. And Harrison Barnes, who I said could be sixth man of the year. I love this Golden State Warrior team, and it's 6-3. You know, they beat the Thunder. Two teams that I think are really playing good, Minnesota and Portland, who we both had, you know, both at the end back into the playoffs. Well, they're both playing like they want to be like a 5 or a 6 seed or a 4 seed. Clippers are playing well. Let me ask you this, though. The Phoenix Suns, who are like 5-3, they're hosting tonight out here. Brooklyn, who's 2-5. How about that? The Phoenix Suns, ladies and gentlemen, Bledsoe is scoring over 20 a game playing ball. Dragic, the Morris brothers, P.J. Tucker, Channing Frye, Miles Plumlee starting and dropping double-doubles.
MP.
How you like the Phoenix Suns, man? They're not tanking
nothing,
y'all.
How you like them Suns? How about them Suns?
They're not tanking. Hey, you got to show them love, man. They're balling out.
They're not tanking, and I give them all the credit in the world. I don't think they'll be there at the end of the season, but I do think that right now they're doing their thing. I mean, Bledsoe scoring 21 a game. This kid was pushing Chris Paul and pushing Chris Paul, and then finally the Clippers said, you know what? We've got a young stud. We've got to trade him. And like you said, I mean, 21-7. Eric Bledsoe might be – I mean, an all-star,
most improved.
Comeback player of the year, or most improved player
most improved,
of the year.
Yeah,
I mean,
most
good
improved.
For him.
Get the...
Good for him.
Yeah.
And Miles Plumlee, where did he come from? I mean, he came from Duke, we know that.
Guy.
But nobody expected
him. But he was just learning
him.
Behind West and Hibbert, right? Just learning, and evidently he paid attention. Because he's balling out, man.
Sure did. Averaging almost 10 rebounds a game. I mean, wow.
It's great to see. But let me ask you this real quick. So we know what the Pacers are doing. They play Milwaukee tonight at home, so they'll probably wind up being 9-0. But are you concerned for like our boy Ricky and all the Brooklyn fans, like the Brooklyn Nets? Are you concerned at 2-5? And you know they got spanked the other night by the Kings. I tweeted that out. The Sacramento Kings, who you were poo pooing, actually are playing pretty good. Sacramento's another young team.
No, they're terrible.
With, you know,
don't worry about them. Don't worry about
Marcus
Sacramento.
Thornton.
They're 2-5. They'll be terrible this year.
Listen, they put it on the Brooklyn Nets. They put it on the
Brooklyn
Nets.
Yes, they did, to win their second game.
So, but what's up with Brooklyn? Is it just they need to gel and Karolenko's got to get back healthy? Like, what's going on, man?
Brooklyn's
what
in trouble,
are they
too.
Do?
Brooklyn's in trouble, too. I tell you what, that team is old, and that team – if they're not in the playoff run, is going to check out. So Jason Kidd has got a job to do in this first half of the season, which is to get some spark into these guys and really get them in the mix, because Kevin Garnett has no allegiance to Brooklyn. Paul Pierce has no allegiance to Brooklyn. Now, they're veterans, and Jason Terry, too.
Oh, yeah, they're going to show
up. They're veterans, and they're going to show up, and they're saying the right things. But you know what? Deep down in their hearts, they're not really, really, really engaged and committed to Brooklyn. So, and I don't blame them, right? It's at the end of their careers, and if that team is not in the playoff mix by around the All-Star break, I could see it going south real fast. And I could see those nagging injuries starting to creep up on them. So I think, to me, it's imperative that Brooklyn wins some games, starts getting the fans excited. Maybe
Well, it's
got
to be D. Will and Lopez. They have to be the leaders.
Back
they're
again
still
with the Knicks.
Yep, the glue of the team. They need to step up. D. Will and Lopez, and even Joe Johnson. They got to be, you know, aggressive and be, you know, the leaders. So, listen, it's always fun early on in the season talking NBA, and you know, you see some interesting thing going on with the Clippers. Your boy Barnes with his crazy tweets and these different, you know, teams, and my boy Durant is playing out of his mind, and it's great to see. But you know what? We gotta switch pace and keep moving. Let's take a quick break. And let's come back and talk about college football, because we got a couple of games, and then we'll soon be joined with a guest. So we'll be right back. College Football Talk, Ray and Tay today.
Hello, hello, and we're back. We're back to talk college football. Pigskin on Saturday.
Oof.
Well, first let's acknowledge that we had some games earlier this week, right? We got to give some props to Clemson for putting it on Georgia Tech 55-31. And then we got to give props to Northern Illinois, because if you don't know,
Jordan Lynch.
You better educate yourself about Jordan Lynch, who threw for 345 and two touchdowns. Oh, and by the way, ran 20 times for 123 yards and two touchdowns. So
you want to throw him in the Heisman debate? You know, maybe he should get some love from a small school, man.
Why not? 10-0. The guy is 10-0, doing his thing. And they're good. You know, they could be a BCS buster. They could be a Boise State from a few years ago, beating Oklahoma. Remember that Statue of Liberty play in overtime? I tell you what, why not? Why not? I loved the upset story. I love this Northern Illinois team, and kudos to them. They're 15. They'll probably move up. They might be, you know, 10, 11, 12, depending on what happens. So good for them. And what about your boy Taj Boyd?
Well, this is the thing that I love about him. Number one, he stayed for senior year ACC. He's got over 10,000 yards passing now. 97 touchdowns to be number one in the ACC. He passed Phillip Rivers and Russell Wilson, who were, you know, both up there at 95 and I think at 93, and over 1,000 yards rushing. So Taj Boyd still should be in the Heisman talk. We'll ask George Reister about that. I mean, there's, you know, with the controversy going on, you know, with potential sexual assault against Winston, hey, it probably isn't even a case or whatever. You know, they're saying the guy was 5'9". Well, Winston's 6'4", so I don't know. We'll see, right? It's sort of silly, but it could pull some voters away. So you still got to throw in a Manziel, an A.J. McCarron, a Taj Boyd, a Bridgewater, maybe the Jordan Lynch kid. It's wide open, you know, Mariota, and he got hurt, you know, so we'll see what happens, but I still think, you know, the way Winston's played, he deserves it. But I will say this. So we shout out Clemson and Taj Boyd. But look into Saturday. We got an SEC game that is big. 25 Georgia, who's crawled their way back with three losses, back into the BCS 25, top 25 at 6-3, show you the SEC power, against number 7, Auburn, Ray, who is 9-1. 5-1 in the division. They still play Alabama and the Auburn and the Iron Bowl.
9-1 in the nation.
Also very quiet. But I got a little surprise for you. I know what Auburn is doing with Marshall and the running back Mason, who is just a monster. and your boy Coates, who might be related to our boy Ben Coates. You don't remember Ben Coates. But I'm going to just say this, right?
Tight end. I'm going to tell you.
Wait. I'm going to tell you straight up. This is the week where what you said about the SEC is going to happen. Georgia on the road with Gurley healthy and doing his thing, and Murray just going out with a bang. He's almost got 3,000 passing yards, doing what he's doing, he's got 2,400, so almost at 2,500. I'm telling you, this is going to be one of those games, exciting, and Auburn will go home sad. I got the Georgia Bulldogs going in, disrupting Auburn's hopes for a title and playing in the SEC, championship, maybe if they upset Bama. And Georgia upsets Auburn 30-27.
Wow. You know what? Since I predicted it early in the year, I'll stick with it. I'll stick with Aaron Murray and Gurley, and I'll say that Georgia's been in. Even the games that they've lost, they've been in a few of those games. And Georgia's a good team. They're just, unfortunately, playing in the SEC in a season when, the SEC at one point had 8 teams in the top 25. So I think that Auburn's a little bit under the radar, and maybe they have that chip on their shoulder. But I think so, too. I think that Georgia goes in there and wins that game and, again, shakes up the SEC, just like it was done to them earlier in the season when they were the higher-rated team. I think Georgia wins a close one, though. I got them winning 24-23.
24-23. Them Georgia boys, them Bulldogs. Well, then what the other interesting game that we have, we got to go to the Big 12. And we said that this conference, which, Baylor is sort of the creme de la creme of, is pretty solid this year. Big 12 is pretty solid. And our friend of the show, Charles Davis, he felt so, too, going into the season. So you got number 12, Oklahoma State, going into another story program like Georgia, but it's Texas. Number 24, they've jumped back into the top 25.
They've talked about pulling their way back in, right? They were 1-2. Everybody wanted to fire Mac Brown. And now they win, 6 in a row? They're 7-2? That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, no. I got to say that, to me, Georgia is – I mean, Texas is – they've really manned up. I was on Mac Brown, and I was on them, in the season when they made the defensive coordinator change. That, I think, sort of helped things. But I don't know if they can really, really handle this Oklahoma State team. Oklahoma State, to me, might be a little bit much for Texas. And even though Oklahoma State, sort of got handled by, was it Baylor that they lost to, I think Oak State is going to beat Texas. I know Texas is at home. They should be excited because in conference in the Big 12, they're 6-0. And they're 7-2, but you know what? I got Oklahoma State. I'm going home. I'm going with the road teams in this one. I got Oak State, and I got I see a big game. I see a big game from their running back. I like the Brolin kid. I think he's gonna wind up putting up like 100 and change. And I think they beat Texas, and probably a closer game than people think. I'll go 27-24, Oak State.
Yeah, I'm going the other side on that one. I'm saying Austin, Texas, 330.
Mac Brown and the boys.
Longhorn Nation, 6-0 in the Big 12. I think that continues. I think Texas takes care of business at home. I think it'll be a close game, but I think ultimately Texas has the ball. They score, maybe 10 points in the fourth quarter. They win a game. There's not these guys aren't great on offense, but you know what? I think they'll score enough. I think they'll score 24, and they'll win 24-19. I'll throw like a safety or a couple of field goals in there for for Oklahoma State. So yeah, Texas goes to 8-2 overall, 7-0 in the Big 12, and they take care of Oklahoma State. And if so, then the Big 12 becomes very interesting, and that does great wonders for a Baylor team that is now starting to play the heart of their schedule. So if they get to play a Texas team that's going to be ranked in the top 15 or 20, that would be
great
for Baylor. But, yeah, We'll be tuned in. Let's put it that way.
They need that. They definitely need that. And you know, and then we look at also the, you know, the Pac-12, which we will have our main guy.
Yeah, we got
breaking
it
down for us. Yep.
We got George Reister.
Let's bring him in, talking some Pac-12, and our segment Reister's Never Wrong. George, you
hey,
with
George.
Us?
Hey,
George.
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's up? How are you?
Doing good, man.
Yeah, man, I'm great. I'm actually in route to a Pac-12 game as we speak.
Oh, okay.
I'm on the way to the UCLA game as we speak.
Oh, good for you. All right. Well, why don't you talk
about
it?
That's going to be a classic.
Wait, what?
I was saying, I think that's going to be sort of a classic game because Washington has stumbled this season when they face Stanford and Oregon. But, you know, UCLA, if they win this against a tough Washington team, they can play for the Pac-12 title, right? George?
George, you with us?
We lost him. He'll call back in. So basically, he's going to see a great game. We know, you know, Hundley's playing. Washington, we've seen him. They're pretty tough. They just had a tough schedule this year, tough road to go. But we'll have to ask George about also not just, you know, Stanford plays USC, which can always be tough. His Oregon Ducks play against Utah, who upset Stanford.
Upset Stanford, and they had Arizona State. They were up 12 in Arizona State, you know, against Arizona State going into the fourth quarter. So even though on paper Utah doesn't look like, you know, they're only 4-5 and 1-5 in the Pac-12, but, you know, they beat Stanford and they could have beat Arizona State. So that Utah team is not, you know, is not a joke. Now, I think that Oregon has a lot of pent-up frustration. They're going to take it out on somebody. And the opponent this week is Utah. So I think Oregon's going to get back to its winning ways and going to get back to its offensive juggernaut status. But, you know, we'll see what George has to say about that.
Well, do you think that the Ducks, I mean, I guess I got to find out Mariota's health. I mean, is he going?
They said he's playing. They said Marcus Mariota's playing. He's got a knee brace on, and they said that he's playing. The second-string quarterback took second-string reps. So they say that Marcus Mariota is playing. So I'll take them at their word. And, you know, plus they want to win. They want to give him some exposure. Obviously, they don't want to hurt the kid, but they want to give him exposure. And, you know, he's still a favorite for the Heisman.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing that's fascinating about this is that, you know, there are not so many big games this week, but there's still a lot of eyes watching for, you know, for the Heisman debate.
Right. The very least, yeah. Even if there aren't that many top 25 matchups, there's certainly Heisman Trophy implications. So Taj Boyd did his thing to come back into the Heisman race, right? He probably took a couple steps back when he got absolutely crushed by Florida State. And famous Jameis Winston probably went up a couple notches in that game. And Taj Boyd was able to work his way back into the picture. And here we go. I think we got George again.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can pull him in. Hey, George,
okay.
How you doing?
Doing all right. How are you?
Good, good. Hopefully we get a good connection. So we were just talking about a couple of things right up your alley. So you've got a UCLA game that you're going to now, and then you've got your Oregon Ducks playing against a potent Utah team, a Utah team that beat Stanford and almost beat Arizona State. So talk to us a little bit about the Pac-12 this week.
Yeah, first of all, we'll start with the game today. This is really a, I don't want to call it a trap game, but a game that UCLA really better pay attention to and really better bring their A game today because Washington is a much better team than their record is showing. You know what? I apologize for saying that because I'm the main person always screaming at people saying, you are what your record is. but at the same time, they have been just, you know, they've just been cannibalized by the Pac-12. You know, they were undefeated, ran into Stanford, and then ran into another buzzsaw at Oregon. And then they had a letdown. They let Oregon beat them 2 weeks in a row. Oregon and Stanford beat them 2 weeks in a row. and when they went down to Arizona, or either Arizona or Arizona State, they got demolished.
Arizona State, yeah.
Yeah. So.
No, you're right. That's a rough way to go.
Yeah, this is a game that UCLA really has to come out and win to really show that, and for people to really give them the credit that they deserve. They are in the hunt for a BCS game. And the Pac-12 South, they still got to play USC and Arizona State. So if they win out, they're going to be in the Pac-12 championship game. This is – every game is critical for them right now. And every game is critical for Washington if they're trying to get past that 7-6 mark that they have been at for the last, what, 3 years?
Exactly. So tell us about your Ducks. I'm concerned about Mariota, and I know he's probably going to go. Let us know how you think he'll do and if he's still, you know, still in the running for the Heisman.
Well, obviously, yes, he is still in the running for the Heisman. Everybody, they judge things on a week-by-week basis. As soon as you lose, all of a sudden, now you're out of the Heisman. That doesn't make any sense. And, you know, it's the reality is the person that I think should win the Heisman as of right now and this whole entire season has to be Johnny Manziel. He is having a better statistical year than he had last year, and he won the Heisman last year.
With all the pressure on him, right?
Exactly. Forget all the off-field stuff and the fact that people just don't like him. Give the man his just due. People who want to talk about A.J. McCarron, throw that stuff out the window. He's a nice quarterback. He's a nice team guy. But, you know, there's nothing outstanding about him.
No, you're 100% right.
He's more of a game manager.
People are talking about a Lifetime Achievement Award. That's a different award. You know, this is for the most outstanding player in the 2013 season, and that's not A.J. McCarron.
Now, you are 100% right about that. That was like the year that Ron Dane won.
I remember.
Because he broke the NCAA record. He did have a good season, but it wasn't the most outstanding. And that's one thing about the Heisman. It's got to transition from being the best person the quarterback on the top five teams in the country. Those are the only people now who have a chance to win the award. So running backs don't have a chance to win the award. Wide receivers really never really truly had a chance to win the award. Let's really be objective about this and make it about the best player or the most outstanding. Is it the most valuable player in college football, the most valuable to their team, or the most outstanding and it's who's having the best season? I think the award needs to be redefined itself.
True, George, but let me ask you, be fair. We know what Manziel's done. Famous Jameis, he's had some big games and knocked down some big teams. Do you think he still could be in the running, even with the controversy swarming around him?
Of course I think that he should still be in the running, but at the same time, while he has had some great games, they weren't all great against the top opponents. If you look at the game, their biggest game of the season, he threw one touchdown and two interceptions. They against Miami. They did win the game, but you know you have to really keep things in perspective. Is that he's a really good young player on a really really good team. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you are the most outstanding player. I mean, there are other players let's take. I hate to talk about this year quite as much because the year is not done and you're not looking back on it. Hindsight. Let's take a last year for example. You have Marquise Lee, who I feel could have easily won the Heisman last year from the Pac-12, the wide receiver from USC.
He was my pick to win it this year. I thought he'd be like Tim Brown and win it.
Yeah. He was literally demolishing everybody last year, but they didn't give him the award. And then you look at who finished second. Matt Ikeo, when you look at a guy like Kiko Alonso from Oregon, he finished with nearly the exact same stats as
Let's tell you, he's having a better rookie season, too.
Right, and look at what he's doing in Buffalo now.
Yeah, exactly. So it's literally like when you go to the Heisman Pundit website and you go to the Heisman site, it's like Big Brother manipulating you into what to see, because they're telling you who the front runners are, and then you have to pick from these people, as opposed to doing what the right thing to do is and letting people choose for themselves. When you're telling people essentially who to vote for, and you're narrowing down the pool of available candidates, just by it's a manipulation. I hate to be the conspiracy guy, but
I totally understand.
It's the nature of football in general, where the quarterbacks get much too much, praise when things go well, and they get way too much of the blame when things go poorly. But it's always about the quarterback, and it's a team game at the end of the day. And like you said, the most outstanding player isn't necessarily the quarterback on the top five team.
Exactly. Like the year that Adamakin Sue came out. Adamakin Sue was the best player in college football that season.
Yep.
I had not seen a defensive lineman just dominate people, offensive linemen of good teams like this since maybe like Warren Sapp.
He put that Nebraska team on his back.
Warren Sapp or Hugh Green,
crazy.
Warren Sapp or Hugh Green.
Exactly. But we can get back to the Oregon game, because I can talk about this Heisman thing until the show goes off.
No, definitely. So George, give us a score, and how dominating do you think your Ducks will be in a bounce back game?
Oh, real quick, just to answer the question that you did ask me at first about Mariota, I was not at liberty to discuss it in the media, but I knew that Mariota was hurt going into the Stanford game. I was hoping that the extra days would, be able to help him out. But in the UCLA game, in the first half, one of the guys fell on his leg, and he actually got up and he faked and pretended to fix his socks. And I knew at that point in time that he was hurt. Then I was in the training room after the game, and I found out that he was. And that was the reason why. And even though Oregon dominated the second half, they started to throw the ball instead of him running. Because if you notice the last two games, he's the second half of the UCLA game, all the way through the Stanford game, he had no rushing, like designed rushing attempts. They were all off of broken plays, off of passes.
Oh.
Yeah. No, definitely. Thanks. Yeah. Well, thanks for that insight and exclusive. So, George, we got to run. So, since we got to run, but since Reister's never wrong, give us a score. What are the Ducks going to do against them Utah and the Utes?
Oregon comes out and they dominate, and they show that they are still a national championship caliber team, and dominate 42-14, the team that beat Stanford, the team that beat them.
Okay.
28 points. Okay. I can see it happening. I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think
all right. Sounds great, George.
Out on Utah.
All right. You guys have a good day, and if it's not right, there is wrong, and I'll see y'all, next week.
All right.
Yeah,
George.
Definitely. We'll talk to you off air. We'll probably see you next Thursday. We'll have some scheduling stuff going on, but definitely. We'll talk to you again next week, George. Thanks so much.
All right.
All right. Thanks, George.
Take care. Oh, wow. You got to love that. A little insight. We'll definitely have to share that with our audience about Mariota and stuff, and that's a great point, and, you could totally see that being the case. Now, let's run to the NFL because we still got to talk about it. Ed Reed goes to the Jets. We're looking at the first game, Jets at Bills. And, Ray, I got to be honest. I've been giving the Jets a little bit more love than you. Right now, the Jets, they're a playoff team. And to me, that is amazing. And I don't think E.J. Manuel is completely healthy, and I don't think his development, I think, has been delayed with his injuries, and I think they can stop the run enough. The Jets' defensive line is like top three against the run in the NFL. It might be number one against the run. And Richardson and those boys, what the Jets are doing, and Rex and Rex Ryan's doing is incredible. I think Geno has a good enough game. I think the Jets beat the Bills 20-16 in upstate New York.
Yeah, you know, I've been wrong about these Jets all year, and I don't even want to try to be right. I just maybe I should just pick against them every week, but
no,
I do think that they'll win this week. I think the Jets have a better team than the Bills, especially with the Bills' issues at quarterback, and Stevie Johnson's been ruled out, so they don't really have much of explosiveness on the outside. So I like the Jets in a tight game. Again, I don't love the Jets' offense, but I think they do enough to win. And so I have the Jets winning 23-17.
Okay. Well, let's move it quick. So I think what's going to be interesting in this game is you're going to see the Baltimore Ravens go to the Chicago Bears. And I think this is where the season turns around. I think the Baltimore Ravens defense is showing that they're still a top defense. And I think maybe Ray Rice gets going against this Bears team, even though, you know, you're starting to see their defense start to get a little bit healthier. My concern is McCown. Cutler's out, and I love their offense, and I like what McCown can do, but I just think he might give you the costly turnover, you know, which is why he's not a starter. And I think maybe they can get Ray Rice in the screen game and seem to get things going. I don't know if Pitt is going to make it back yet, but some of the guys are starting to get healthy, and Flacco, I think, might get in the groove. I see the Ravens winning a tough one at 4-5, going up to 5-5 and making the Bears from 5-4 to 5-5. And I think that they pull out a tough game, 23-21. Ravens beat the Bears.
Look, both of these teams are struggling, and both of these teams have to win if they want to have any chance at a playoff spot. I don't like McCown stepping in for the Bears. I think that they lose some explosiveness with Jay Cutler's arm. Marshall and Jeffries may be the, you know, big, bad, bully, you know, receivers, and they're going to give the Ravens
like
issues. Them. Yeah, I think the Ravens will pull it out and do just enough to beat the Bears. I think it's going to be a sloppy game. I got the Ravens winning 21-20.
21-20. Well, next up, we got a revenge game because the Cleveland Browns are going to the Cincinnati Bengals. And first time around, Bengals got slapped up and shocked by the Browns in Cleveland. Well, I think we got something different going on now. I think the Browns and Campbell, it's not the same team. It's not Brian Hoyer. It's not, you know, just the hype. They're solid, and they're 4-5. They're still around in the playoffs, but you know what? They're 1-3 on the road. And going to Cincy, I think Cincy turns the corner. They're going to go from 6-4 to 7-4, and they're going to stay undefeated at home, go to 5-0. And I just think they're starting to – they're going to get it right and get in the rhythm. They, you know, have a bad taste from that Dolphin game. I say the Bengals and Andy Dalton, A.J. Green, and my boy Marvin Jones – They pull it off, I'll say 27-20.
I think the Bengals, who are 6-4, are frustrated that they're not 8-2. They're frustrated that TR picked them to win the division and be the best team in that division. They need to take it out one by one on these revenge games, and I think they do with the Bengals. I think they put up 31, and they win 31-17 against the Browns. I think that's a big-time blowout.
Ouch, ouch. Well, you know, this is where you get to the heavy hitters. If we have time, we'll get back to see. You know, I think I might have an upset special with the Detroit Steelers game, but let's go to the heavy hitters, and we'll see if we have time for that one. But straight up and down, when you're looking at a classic game, it is this. It is the San Francisco 49ers at the New Orleans Saints. This is what schedule makers, you know, drool about at the end of the season or midway point, you know, when you're having these type of games in the same conference. The Niners, I don't know. There's something you don't know with the concussion, if Davis is going to play or be even completely aware 100%. You know, I think he might. I don't know if he made it to practice today, but he's missed some practice, been a little limited. They're 6-3, and their offense has been limited, and maybe they're still a week away from Manningham and Crabtree from returning. The Saints are at home. They're 7-2. They're 5-0 at home. They're going to win. They'll be 6-0. Saints are too tough. Now, Niners defense does travel, but it's not going to travel enough with their offense. So I think they lose back-to-back after they lost to the Panthers. I say the Saints win 28-23.
Really?
Saints pull it out. Yeah.
Now, if this game were in San Francisco, would it be would you pick the opposite score?
Lower scoring, but I'd pick the Niners. I would. I think the Saints' defense has improved enough, and I think the Saints' offense at home, they're too crisp. They'll be able to score
okay.
on the Niners.
I think Jimmy Graham's a little banged up still, even though, what did he go, 36 snaps, and then last week he went up to 50-some-odd.
Yeah, but Kenny Stills and Marcus Colston's back. Lance Moore, they're back.
Yeah, I think they're good. I think they're good, but I think the Niners are getting ready to make a second-half playoff push. And
okay.
the Niners are going to take care of business in the Dome. They're going to take out their frustration. That's where they lost their Super Bowl. So they're going to, make sure the electricity works and make sure there's no blackouts at halftime. So I like the Niners. It's a tough, tough game. I think it'll be a punch-you-in-the-mouth type of game. The Saints are an awesome offensive team, but I think the Niners do enough, especially with Alden Smith coming back and playing better, and they're getting healthy, and I like the Niners in this game. I like them in a close game and relatively low scoring, so I'll go with 27-24 Niners.
27-24. All right, so we got Sunday Night Football. This
Woo!
Is a classic. It's the undefeated Chiefs at the Peyton Manning injured Denver Broncos. Now, he's playing, ladies and gentlemen, and he's hurt. Don't let anybody fool you. His ankles, he's jacked up. He's not going to move that great, and he never does anyway. I just think they're at home, and I think they'll be able to do enough. I think the 9-0 goes to 9-1. I think the Broncos go to 9-1, and this division's tied. I say the Broncos, Julius Thomas, a little No'Shawn Moreno, and maybe some screen passes. Watch Eric Decker this game. I say Manning. Oof, this is a hard one. 27-20. Jamaal Charles has a big game, but 27-20 Broncos.
I got to agree. I thought last week that the Broncos would I went out on a limb. I said the Broncos would win two out of the next three games, and they got the two games against Kansas City and the one game against the Patriots there in the middle. And despite Manning's ankle, I think that the Kansas City Chiefs don't score enough. And this is my problem with them in the playoff runs. They've held everybody to under 17 points, but when you start playing the Broncos, and when you start playing the Patriots and potentially the Colts and teams that can score, you know, you're going to have to score some points too. You can't just rely on defense. I'm a big fan of defense, right? Defense wins championships. But I think in this game, I think that the Broncos, despite, you know, even with Peyton Manning, the Broncos will still be able to put up 30. So I think the Broncos in this game put up exactly 30. I think the Chiefs put up 20, and I think the Broncos win by 10.
All right, so real quick, two games we got to talk about. We got to talk about the NFC division matchup, NFC East. I think the Eagles against the Redskins is going to be interesting. I think the Redskins, you know, they start to wake up. But I think the problem is they're playing a team that smoked them early, and I think they still got their number. I think the Eagles and Nick Foles keep the confidence and the streak going. I say that the Eagles win a pretty prolific game. They win 31-28 Eagles over the Redskins.
Woo! This game is critical. Critical for playoff positioning. The Eagles, if they win this, they take a half a game lead on Dallas and pretty much knock out the Redskins and put an end to their season. And they're going great. But actually, I think this NFC is going to be a slugfest. So I like the Redskins to win this game. I don't know that I have a huge, you know, confidence in the Redskins to take care of business, but I just see this NFC East going down to the last 2-3 weeks of the season.
Mm.
So I like this game to go, even though it's in Philly, these NFC East teams are just, they just battle, and the home field is not that big a deal. So I like, you know, the Eagles are 0-4 at home, so the Eagles are starving for a home win. But for some reason, I think the Redskins win this game. They go to 4-6. The Eagles go to 5-6. A little bit of pressure comes off of our boy RG3.
Alfred Morris
has a big game.
I like the Redskins.
I like the Redskins 24-20.
All right. And in our last game, you know we got to talk about it. The 6-3 Lions, number one in the NFC. Calvin Johnson returned to practice, but he's banged up. And they're going to my 3-6 Steelers. Steelers are 2-2 at home. And this has been a rough season. But I'm going out on a limb. And I'm going to tell you, I think that we get to Stafford and we pick him off. I don't care about their great defensive line. Their secondary is not good. And Ben and Todd Haley, they get rid of the ball quicker. They can run Le'Veon Bell because the Lions are not great against stopping the run. And the Steelers do great at screen passing and screen, you know, wide receiver screens. And they'll get Heath Miller the ball. The Steelers surprise everyone. And they get back to playing ball, baby. Steelers Nation, you stand up because Tay's got your back. The Steelers beat the Lions 24-23 at home. Steelers beat the Lions, and we're still back up in the NFC North playoff and the wild card hunt. Let's go, Steelers.
Negative. The
yes.
Lions went into Chicago, took care of business. They'll go into another cold city. The Steelers, it should be very windy, this, I guess, in the in the Midwest and even as far as Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Reggie Bush is a big big question mark. How effective
Heinz
can
Gert.
He be? And my boy Joik Bell giving a little change of pace. But I think Stafford, the Calvin Johnson, and they'll find some other ways to spread the ball around. I like the Lions in this game. I think the Steelers still have problems. I think that the whole Ben Roethlisberger, you know, all this swirling
controversy
is just going to make them lose focus. So I like the Lions in this game. I like the Lions in this game 27-23.
All right, great show. Hey, real quick, you think the Giants can win again? They beat the Packers and your boy Scott Tolzien?
I think so. I think the Giants are a better team than a Tolzien-led Packers, and they're decimated
definitely.
On offense, especially
yeah,
the skill position.
I got the Giants winning that one, too, maybe 27-17. So, listen, great show. We'll be back Monday, and, the holidays are coming up, so, you know, we'll give you all the insight and, you know, Ray and Tay scheduling and, you know, how we like to bounce around on our turkey day and give you the game. So, hey, great show, and thanks for George with Rice Does Never Wrong, you know, and doing his thing, and watch all the games. Should be a fun sports weekend.
Yeah, have a great weekend, and join us on Monday,
talking sports with friends. Peace.
We're
out.
How you do with your lost ass crew? That's why I got the road map just for you. Hop it in your car, motor plane, can't save it.